I didn't have much faith in Louisville stopping Notre Dame, but yet at times they did a pretty good job. So it was a competitive Monday night game, which is better than a non-competitive game. So I like that. Good win for Notre Dame on the road. I don't think it's going to be a college football playoff type season for Notre Dame, though, this year.
Totally agree on all counts. More competitive game than I thought. I got the push, Mark. So you win week one, 3-2, and you hit your lock. I went 2-2-1, missed my lock, and I believe Matt Ravis 2-3, missing his lock. So the picks are complete for week number one. I thought Scott Satterfield's team, they at least played a lot tougher with a lot more effort and energy than what they showed at the end of last year. So it seems like at least early on they're buying in to what he's selling. And yeah, I don't know. Notre Dame, I don't think that they're going to – I think the at Georgia, at Michigan is going to be L's, and there's probably another loss, or if not two, somewhere along that schedule. But it was a competitive football for the most part last night, so I definitely enjoyed that. I'm excited for the start of NFL this week, Marcus. I had a bunch of fantasy drafts going on in my house last night. My fantasy draft.
You had kids and yes, adults.
That's right. And I was late to my party. Matt Ravis, welcome to the show today. How are you?
Doing well.
I have Zeke. I don't know if you heard last hour, but I got Zeke auto-drafted at the number 7 overall pick. So we are on Zeke watch right now. He is headed to Dallas as they're trying to finalize a deal, and he would play this week. So fantasy owners, myself now included, we're all hopeful that a deal is indeed done. So, yes, I had my draft, but different this year, my boys, my sons, Jackson and Hudson, their buddies, they offered to have them in a fantasy league. So they had a fantasy draft last night. And that was interesting because it's pretty cool, man. My kids have never really been into sports, Mark. Not into sports. Into pro sports. But Hudson is like, my 7-year-old is like all in, dude. I mean, he is over the moon right now. And so I kind of thought at first, like when my wife asked me, do you want to let the boys play in this fantasy league? I was like, sure. But I thought they're not going to take it very serious. Hudson was like so serious. I mean, he was so dialed in. He had the number 1 overall pick, and he wanted me to help him. And I thought, you know, oh, he's just going to want Kyler Murray's his favorite player or Baker Mayfield. No, he didn't want that. He wanted to know what's going to give him the best chance to win. So we assembled his team, and it wound up being just off the charts. Might be one of the best fantasy teams I've seen. My other son, Jackson, kind of went the other route. He went the route I thought my 7-year-old would go, and his first 3 picks were Kyler Murray in the first round, Adrian Peterson in the second round, and he had a friend helping him. He thought he was taking Antonio Brown, but he took A.J. Brown. So you know how they give you like the report on how your team is projected to do based off the draft?
Yeah. Yes, that's correct.
So Hudson got one that basically said he is projected to go 14-0 and win the league championship. And in the writing column, basically said that he's got as good a team as he possibly could have gotten. And then my other son, Jackson, got his, and he's projected to go 0-10. And it basically said, may God have mercy on your team, because it is that bad. So we are
opposite ends of the spectrum in my house. Hey, you never know, man. Pat Mahomes was not drafted very high last year, and so we'll see what Kyler Murray can do. If he throws 40 touchdown passes, then that draft evaluation will be pretty weak.
I'll just say, I told him, I said, hey, man, it's fantasy. You never know what can happen. We'll watch it each week. We'll find some diamonds in the rough along the way. Just keep your head up. You never know what can happen in a fantasy league. The only fantasy league that I have won, or the one time I think I've won the big one that I'm in, was when it got auto-drafted. And so, you know, hey, you never know, right? You never know exactly how these things wind up. But I just thought it was cool that they're getting into it. Now I could talk a little shop, talk a little football with my boys. Kind of cool.
I think that shows you how big fantasy football is getting these days.
That's exactly right too, Ravis. That's 100% right. Fantasy football has taken over the world, man.
It's a big deal. And it's a lot of fun. I've got one more draft tonight, then we'll be drafted complete. I like waiting. It's the right time to draft. Labor Day weekend or right after Labor Day weekend is the right time to draft, because if you do it otherwise, you kind of it doesn't give you as much of a chance to know, to really know what's going on.
So with that being said, tonight in your draft, knowing the news we know about Zeke, where would you have him on your board, Mark?
Well, I pick at 9. He'll be gone before I get there. I would have him at. If you think he's going to play, and it looks like he's probably going to play, you've got him no lower than 3.
I agree. If not 2. I mean, you just look at usage based off of last year. No one had more touches in football than that guy.
Would he be the number one pick if he wasn't a holdout?
Possibly, yeah. I mean, I think it's a real question, him or Barkley, right?
I mean, I think I give the advantage to Zeke because of the offense.
The offensive line. The only thing is, in PPR, just, you know, Barkley's just going to get so, I mean, Zeke had, we said he had over 75 catches last year, but what did Saquon have in the 90s, I think? I think Saquon had 91 catches or something crazy. Either way you go, I think you're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, he had 91 receptions.
You'd be good. But that's a bunch. All those guys are the first, you know, Alvin Kamara's in that group, Christian McCaffrey also in that group. Those are the first 4 picks that should come off the board in the draft. Of a league that's a PPR league.
I've also got
you. Get past that.
I wound up getting Dak Prescott at the very end of the draft, so I'm cowboyed up. Matt Ryan, I took him earlier, and then at the very end, Dak was still sitting there, so I said, why not? Might as well get Dak as a backup. So I was not fandom. I don't think I would have taken Zeke. It was just by luck, auto-drafted, but I'm cowboyed up, and I guess I'm an Oakland Raider fan because I do have Antonio Brown and Josh Jacobs on my roster too, so I need a big year for the Cowboys offense and the silver and black. Hopefully John Gruden puts those guys in some good spots.
Okay, here's what we're going to do today. We're going to take some phone calls during the show. OU is at the podium. We've got some stuff queued up from Mike Gundy from yesterday. The Cowboys met with the media. Oklahoma's getting that done today, pushing their week back 1 because of the Sunday performance against Houston. We'll have Roy Young in the 1 o'clock hour. We'll preview a lot going on in the NFL. We still have to make our NFL divisional picks, which we have not done yet.
Tomorrow.
But, Dusty, tomorrow. In case of the fact that you might be unaware of what would be happening this weekend with the opponents, I have created a scouting report to let you know what you can expect from South Dakota and McNeese State. Would you like to hear a little of that?
Sure, I would love to.
Okay, well, do you want to start with South Dakota or McNeese State first?
Tell me about the Coyotes.
I think I'm gonna. I don't know. I'm calling the Coyotes the Coyotes. I think you can call them either way. They are the, to me, less capable of the two opponents. Yeah. They're from Vermilion, South Dakota, Dusty, which is a small town in southeast Dakota, right on the Nebraska border. They play in the Missouri Valley Conference. They have a sports radio station in a town of 10,000. It's called 1570 AM, The Ticket. And those people are geared up to play Oklahoma, I'm sure, this week. Probably got themselves a credential, rolled down into a stadium of 86,000 people, because when they go to a home game at the Dakota Dome, Dusty, it holds only 5,500. Can you have a dome that holds 5,500 people?
Yeah, it's called the gymnasium.
I think that's right. It's a gym. That's not a dome.
That's no dome.
5,500 people. The Dakota Dome. Okay. They lost their opener in the Dakota Dome to Montana, which is a pretty good team. They're ranked in the top 25 of 1AA opponent. Probably the best day in the history of Vermilion, North Dakota. A couple fellas spent the night there in 1804 named Lewis and Clark on the banks of the Missouri River. They made their way all the way to the Pacific, and it's a great story that has not such a good ending.
You telling me that's the highlight of Vermilion, South Dakota, when Lewis and Clark spent the night?
I think Lewis and Clark came through as a big deal, right? Do you think they'll ever get somebody to play in the Dakota Dome as noteworthy as Lewis and Clark?
I'm surprised Oklahoma didn't do a home-and-home with them.
That'd have to be a 7-on-7 game. I mean, maybe they can go back there in the summer and just take their receivers and leave the linemen at home, so... I'll tell you this, though. They're not – Bob Nielsen's their head coach. He's kind of a lifer at this level and lower levels, and he's coached a lot in Minnesota Duluth. They lost last year to Kansas State by 4. They beat Bowling Green in 2017 by 8. And so, you know, they play a Division I opponent every year, but this will be probably a new level of spanking that they take at the hands of Oklahoma. So that's all I got on Montana, or excuse me, on South Dakota. Nothing personnel-wise that really stands out other than they've got a decent quarterback and a bunch of receivers coming back off last year's team.
They lost to the Montana Grizz, I looked up.
They did.
0-1 on the season. Now, Montana is one of the best FCS schools pretty much year in, year out. I think it was 31-17, if memory serves. I looked it up the other day to a not as good of a scouting report as you. I just wanted to see who they had played. But I was just – if you're the defensive coordinator and you're watching this this offensive tape from this past week, I mean, what are you thinking about as you're sitting there with the clicker in your hand and trying to game plan and figure out how you're going to stop Lincoln Riley's offense?
Well, it's funny that you ask because they have transitioned into a new positionless defense this year, Dusty. So it's like kind of the amoeba defense. And they're not going to tell you where guys are going to line up. So there's going to be kind of a huddle, and they're all going to be standing around. And then close to the snap, they're going to get in position. But if they think that's going to work against Jalen Hurts and OU, not so much. Maybe against South Dakota State, the Jackrabbits, or the Bison, or North Dakota, it might be a little bit better. But we'll see. They did help Montana to, what was it, 24?
Was it 24?
It's a 24-17 final?
24-17, okay. Well done. All right, tell me about McNeese State. What's going to be up in
I will tell you about McNeese State. I found out some things that I didn't know about McNeese State. They're in the Southland Conference, Lake Charles, Louisiana.
Ooh,
and okay. They've got some familiar names on their coaching staff. Marcus Walker, University of Oklahoma defensive back.
Oh, I know
coaches
Marcus
the
Walker.
Secondary there. Nick Graham, Millwood Falcon, played at Tulsa University, played for the Eagles in the NFL for a little bit. He is a co-defensive back coach. Their head coach, Sterling Gilbert, we know all about him. He coordinated mm-hmm. the Texas offense a few years back, worked at Tulsa. And so it's his first year. He knows what he's doing a little bit. And, I mean, it's a sad deal because – while the LSU-Texas game is going on, Eddie O's son, Cody, won't be able to watch it because he'll be quarterback in McNeese State.
Wow. So, how about that?
Cody Orgeron is the coach there. Now, on a serious note, McNeese State, they haven't been terrible when they've been playing teams at the Division I level. They got beat last year 30-3 by BYU. They've won 9 games in 17, they won 10 games in 15, and in 2014, we all remember this, even though we probably don't remember, they went into Lincoln and almost beat the Cornhuskers. They got beat 31-24. So this is it's a pretty good football program. They've got a lot of kids from Louisiana, a lot of kids from East Texas, Southeast Texas, that are going to be pretty good players, and they'll have their fair share of success in their league, which is the Southland. They beat Southern, a big rivalry in Louisiana, last week. And I don't think they've ever lost to a SWAC team. At least they've won their last 15. So look, put it this way. When Savannah State played at OSU a couple years ago, that was not a very good 1AA team. This is a pretty decent 1AA team at McNeese State. Now, with that being said, I would still take the Cowboys probably minus.
Is there a line on this?
I haven't seen one. Are we going to make an executive decision not to pick these games this week?
That would be great. Can we do that?
They do. One other guy I'll mention on McNeese State is that, and he had a good game last week, when Gilbert came from being the coordinator at USF under Charlie Strong, Elijah Mack's a pretty good running back that they had there. So he's a guy that might play at the next level at some point in time. They'll be carrying the football from them.
Very nice. Very nice.
We're going to pick 5 free agent games this week. I mean, it's like all wide open. We have no ties to Oklahoma or Oklahoma State picking those games.
I had to make a score prediction on the Blitz on Sunday night of those, and I think I just said 55-10 and I think 58-14. I expect a lot of offense, and I expect both defenses to have pretty nice evenings.
So here's a legitimate question. And the OU, again, like I said, I think that the McNeese team has got a better chance to be competitive. If Oklahoma, will they score 50 in the first half?
If
56 to nothing at half and then ended up 60, three or something
to
14.
I'm not seeing a number on this, at least not on ESPN.com, on Oklahoma, South Dakota. They do give, the matchup predictor does give South Dakota a 0.8% chance of winning. I mean, I don't think they'll score 50 in the first half, but I mean, I think they could if they wanted to. But no, I don't think they'll score 50. I will say I think be a good chance to get a look at some backups in the second half. I doubt you'll see the starters play much past midway through the third quarter if he even gets that long.
Is this the second 1AA team that Oklahoma's played? They played Murray State.
I remember Florida A&M.
This may be the third 1AA opponent that they played that I can remember. And maybe I could do a better job of looking that.
Was it the Rattlers, I believe? Florida A&M Rattlers?
FAMU was the Rattlers, right.
Yeah. I remember when they came in. What was the score of that game? It was not pretty. I think Savannah State, when they went up to Stillwater, 84-0 kind of rings a bell.
That's right. That was a bad. And again, that was just a team that was not good at that level at all. They were not competitive.
No, they weren't. Yeah, there's no numbers on this. So yeah, we have free agency out there. Are you going to go after these any of these big time matchups? LSU, Texas, A&M, Clemson. You and I are kind of sharing a brain.
To be honest with you, I've not started to look into the picks. I really would rather pick a game where I don't have to be as concerned about a big number. You know, really the best situation, right, Dusty, is to pick a dog that you think can win the game. If you got a better team that's the underdog,
I think Texas can win. I mean, that number scares me. Like, I'd feel better about it if it was like two. You know what I mean? If LSU was like a 2-point favorite, I'd feel better about it. That may sound stupid, but it tells me that, I don't know, it's a funny number. Texas being at home and and it just keeps climbing. Again, to watch this number and what it's done this summer, to go from LSU -3.5 is what it opened, like I think back in June, to right at training camp, it was a pick 'em. It had been bet all the way down to a pick. And then the opening line came out, it's Texas +4, and that's already up to 5.5. So I can't quite figure out, you know, what's going on with that number. It just tells me that it would seem like sharp money, big money, is on LSU.
Well, we'll be able to figure that out. I'm sure Todd will tell us. Yeah. I also kind of like to look at the percentage of the money that's on the game. I mean, if it's just highly weighted in one direction, that sometimes can be a bad public side of it. So we'll know more about the game by the time it gets here.
My game, at least from a number perspective, is very interesting. Have you seen mine?
Yeah, I have seen it. I looked
Maryland,
at it.
Maryland, Syracuse?
Or three, right?
Maryland's favorite.
3-point favorite.
1.5.
Down.
So
okay.
Syracuse, the top 25 team on the road, College Park this weekend. The Terrapins, under the guidance of Mike Locksley, Josh Jackson, the Virginia Tech transfer at quarterback, they're a 1.5-point favorite. So could be an interesting game. At least Vegas is telling us it should be very, very close.
Here's an interesting game. I want to ask you a question about an interesting game that happens at 11 o'clock on Saturday morning and kind of get your perspective on something that I think we can relate to here. We're both in the studio today. If you want to talk to us, you can fill up the phones, 460-WWLS, 888-285-WWLS, 460-9957. We'd love to talk to you about anything on your mind, professional, college, fantasy, you name it. There's also some very interesting stuff floating around the internet last night that tells me that the world could be coming to an end, not literally, figuratively, but we have people throwing cupcakes at people in cars. We got people trying to break into Popeyes to get chicken sandwiches holding guns. I mean, what is going on with this world? We'll tell you about all that stuff and more, so stay tuned. Going to be an interesting hour and 40 minutes on the show. Stay tuned.
The Morning Animals.
People were getting mad.
And your phone calls, the lines are full. We appreciate that. The phone calls will be led off today by Amy. Hello, Amy.
I got a question about OU football. I was at that game on Saturday, and I'm already sensing a little bit of frustration from CD. Are you seeing that yet? And maybe it's body language.
What are you referring to?
As in, I think he's wanting a few more passes thrown his way.
I didn't notice
the volume on the opening night. But look, this is just part of when you get good and you've got so many people out there, I would think that they'll try to feature him in certain ways, and I would think in big games he's going to show up too. It's too early to say that he would be frustrated. I would hope he's not. I would think not. I mean, now anybody can get down and shrug their shoulders at a time or two, but they've got the aim of everybody, and I think the quarterback's done a great job of setting the tone for this, is because they talk about individual awards with him more than anybody, is to win games and win the way that they did on Sunday, and then everybody's happy. So
right.
I'm not worried about CD Lamb right now. Get back to me after, you know, 4 or 5 games. If he's got 10 catches and after five games, and I think that that's a little bit of a concern for him individually.
Okay, then the other question was the defense. Those are just little things that will be fixed, right?
You'd like to hope so? Go ahead.
As in just making stupid, you know, hitting late, out of bounds, things like that. Just
yeah, Patrick Fields. Well, you got to be smarter. Yeah, hey, thanks for calling me. Yeah, I mean, I thought there was some. Oh, what Neville had one on the quarterback that it was what probably should have held up. Patrick Fields clearly should not have hit Stevenson over by the sidelines. I mean, yeah, you got to be smarter than that. I would hope that gets cleaned up because there were a couple penalties that helped aid those drives to move on. That you got to get cleaned up. Absolutely. I mean, I think that we've seen all across college football, and you're going to see it in the NFL this week, week one, there's a lot of dumb penalties. I saw them in my game that I called. We saw them that first weekend, Miami and Florida, and you typically see those things this time of year, and now's the time to get it fixed. And I would imagine that that was talked about quite a bit. As far as CeeDee Lamb goes, I mean, it's one game. Yeah, I'm not ready to act as if he's going to be frustrated. And I will just say receivers can be divas, though. And CeeDee's been hyped up, and I'm sure he wants to have big numbers so he can be in New York City at the awards ceremony and have a chance to win the Blitnikoff. But I'm sorry. I totally agree with Mark. It's about winning, not people padding, not receivers making sure they have their stats. And I'm sorry, this team is going to be a team that runs it quite a bit this year, Mark. I mean, that's just going to be the way it is. They're still going to throw the football, but they're going to run the football quite a bit.
Well, and CeeDee's he's a great player. They're going to need him in some games. So I'm
absolutely
sure that there will be a little bit of investing in to try to get the ball to their best players. That's just the way that the football works best. I mean, I think Lincoln Riley knows what he's got in CeeDee Lamb. But you're going to take what's open, but I think that they'll find ways to get him the football. I'm not worried about that. Not worried about it. I mean, Dusty, I can kind of see in some fans' perspective is if you're sitting here and you're going on this checklist and you're going, okay, Hurts for the Heisman, CeeDee Lamb for the Blitnikoff, you know, Murray for the Butkus Award and all that stuff, and you start saying, oh, well, CeeDee Lamb, only two catches, then that kind of concerns you a little bit, but I don't think that's the way to look at it.
I agree.
All right, we have Brandon next. Hello, Brandon.
Hey guys, how are you doing?
Good.
How are you, Brandon?
Good. Thanks for taking my call. Just talk about OU for a second. I was impressed with our performance last night. I thought Jalen Hurts played really well. The defense showed improvement. And I was looking at the ESPN FPI, and they got, like, our toughest remaining game is UCLA with, like, a 63% chance of winning. What do you guys think is, like, the toughest remaining game?
Texas. No doubt. I think Texas is tough. I think at Baylor is going to be tough. And, I mean, we'll see. It's a long way to go. And Mike Gundy has not fared well against Oklahoma. But, you know, I don't think that's going to be just a walk in the park based off what I saw from Spencer Sanders. But I would say toughest remaining games, Texas, Iowa State at Baylor, probably in Stillwater.
Okay. Yeah,
that had to be an oversight. You must have missed Texas because there's no way OU is going to be less of a favorite in Dallas as they are in Los Angeles.
You might look at it because it was like a 63% for UCLA and like a 67% for Texas. You might look at that.
FBI.
Okay. I will.
They get things wrong all the time. Appreciate it, Brandon. What do you think the number is going to be next week in LA?
I think it'll be outside of 14 where the preseason line was. Probably 17. And again, UCLA's got a somewhat tough game this week. They're favored, but they play San Diego State. If they go 0-2, that line could be up to 20.
They look bad in their debut on offense. DTR did not look great.
That's what I was saying. I think that judging them just based on that game would be a mistake. I think they played very poorly. Very poorly.
Yeah. Dorian Thompson-Robinson, 8-26.
But here, at the same time, you have to look at it this way as well. They have four turnovers, and they had some terrible turnovers, and they were still in the game.
I thought their defense looked good. Their defense played well against Cincinnati. No, they played well, but their offense, which is what puzzling, is you know Chip Kelly. You'd think the offense is going to be clicking, and it was anything but that. Now they didn't move Cincinnati off the football. I mean, I don't know. I bet it'll be north of 14.
Their best running back didn't play.
That's right.
I want to see what they do this week. You can't just look at UCLA last week and then forget about them and go, that's the way that team's going to be the rest of the year.
Yeah, I'm not going to say they're going to be hot garbage, but I do not think that's the toughest remaining.
That was hot garbage Thursday.
I do not think that's the toughest remaining game on Oklahoma's schedule. I don't care what the FBI says.
We're in complete agreement. Next up is Noah. Hello, Noah.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good, Noah. How you doing?
Good.
I'm all right. A little disappointed. I'm an Oregon fan, and I live in Norman. I drove down for the game, and I just kind of, like, super hyped because I truly felt and had confidence that Oregon was going to win that game and come away with it. And it's just super frustrating because of last year, you know, like, it's the same old thing. You know, they just couldn't finish. And I just kind of think that Marcus Herrero, he just kind of, I mean, I don't know if he quit or if it's just, you know, the guys didn't make the plays that he was calling, so he decided to go in conservative mode or what. I just wanted to get y'all's thought and see where Oregon goes from here.
I understand your frustration, Noah. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks for listening. I thought Oregon was going to win, too. I picked them to win the game, and it felt like a good pick for a large part of that game. You know, I think you're referencing the Stanford game that comes to mind last year when they were just completely dominating that game, and then they go into a shell, and they allow Stanford to go into Autzen and steal a game they really had no business winning. And I think it's fair to be critical. I mean, we've seen now last year in that game, in this game, the play calling get very, very bland, very, very conservative when they've got a lead. And so I understand. I still think that's a really good team. I still would pick Oregon to win the Pac-12. Now, they got a really tough game against Washington, but I thought that especially early on, it showed why that offensive line was so highly touted. I didn't like the final throw Justin Herbert had that he was throwing to the second row instead of into the end zone. But I thought Justin Herbert did some nice things in that game. Verdell looked pretty good to me. I thought their defense really stepped up for a large part of that game and held Bo Nix in check. And so I thought there was a lot of good things to like from Oregon. I don't walk away from that hanging my head, but I'm with you in the fact that if they do get a lead, they don't need to go into ultra-conservative mode. They need to continue to rely on their quarterback and be a little bit more imaginative, I think, calling plays. And especially, like, I mean, when they went for it, the replay was on last night, and I was rewatching it last night before the Notre Dame game. And they just, on that fourth down play, I mean, they ran right into the teeth of that Auburn defense, and it does seem like, from a play-calling perspective, they're going to have to do a better job.
I don't know how you put this into words or explain it, but sometimes in football there's one team that believes they're going to win, and then there's one team that knows they're going to win. You know, I think it looked to me like even from the coaching staff, Auburn kind of thought they were going to win. They got out to a big lead, and then I think they just kind of were ready for the game to be over, and Auburn never quit. You know, I mean, I just think that Oregon didn't approach the game playing 60 minutes. I think once they got that lead, I think they were kind of like, okay, we're in good shape, and it just – didn't happen for him, man. I think that's an identity issue with a lot of the Pac-12. I mean, and since those USC teams that were just so dominant, it's been tough for those teams to go outside that conference and win these big games. Haven't been able to do it.
Got to finish, man. Got to close teams out. They did not do that the other night. Auburn's a good football team, though.
That's
and Bo Nix continues to get better. They're going to be a tough team to deal with.
They have some players on the defensive line. That's one reason why Oregon may not have had much success running it, too. Matt, who's next? Okay, very good. So hopefully fire someone else in here pretty quickly. That was definitely a tough situation for Oregon to be ahead in that game the entire way and lose it.
Yes.
Let's go to Sherry. What's up, Sherry?
Hi, guys. I'm calling about Kenneth Murray. To see him flying like a guided missile after what he has, how he's performed before and has been so frustrated, it just made my heart just so proud for him. And my favorite player in the past, different player position, but Eric Stryker, he reminded me of Eric Stryker just flying around. And it always made me sad that Eric Stryker couldn't make it in the NFL. Surely Kenneth Murray, if he continues to develop like this, do you think he'll be in the league? I'd love to see him in the league.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's the deal. Eric Stryker was a really good edge rusher, and he was an undersized guy who played with tremendous passion, heart, and that was on display all the time. Kenneth Murray is an NFL body type. He's a great athlete, sideline to sideline. I think Brian Odom has helped him tremendously already, getting a better understanding, and I would agree with you. I just thought overall he looked, just from even the mental standpoint, more in control, and he was flying around the football field, making some plays. So, yeah, he's always been a guy that just from a body type, athleticism, I mean, he's exactly what you're looking for at the college and NFL level. I just think from the mental standpoint, he hasn't always been in a good spot. And I think Brian Odom's really helped him quite a bit.
Dusty, you graded him out pretty well, right? You thought he played very well?
I thought he played very well, yes. As good as I've seen him play in a while. Maybe since he's been here.
All right, hey, thanks for the call. We appreciate it.
Thanks,
we're going to take a break. We're in studio today. Keep them coming, man. You keep calling. We'll keep taking them. 460-WWLS, 888-285-WWLS. I know people have a lot of questions about what they saw last weekend. As we're just getting into the start of the college football season, great time of the year. Stay tuned to the Monsters of the Midday here on the Sports Animal.
Sports Animal Soundbite.
Jalen Hurts, I mean, he
need those guys to get some pressure on the passing game and just hold up the line of scrimmage. There's some other audio we have from Mike Gundy. Did some coaches get stuck in an elevator?
You didn't see that the other night?
No, I did not.
Coming out of halftime. Yeah. They delayed the game.
That's terrible, man.
And it's neither staff. It was both Oregon State and Oklahoma State. Yeah. It was crazy. It was the first time I've ever seen or even heard of anything like that. Yeah, the elevators got stuck. And so, like, they kept panning up to the – they had a camera there on both the Oregon State box and the Oklahoma State coach's box. And nobody was in there. It was like one GA that probably never went down in each box. It's kind of crazy. A little bizarre.
Well, that happened to me, remember, last year in Norman. Get jammed in there with 90,000 people, and the thing won't go up. Doors won't open. That is not the right spot to be in. All right, let's hear from Mike Gundy on the elevator situation.
I'm getting mixed reactions on what happened. Supposedly, there was two guys from Oregon State on the elevator, and however many we have on there, I think there's 10 or something. I don't know how many we have on there. And two of their guys missed the elevator, and so they jumped on with them, and it, like, smashed, and it maybe put them over the weight. And so I told McIndoe, I said, well, were any of their guys as big as you? And he said no, and I said, then you should have picked them up and put them out of the elevator and said, it's not my fault you missed your elevator. We're not going to overweight this car on the way up. But that was a pretty good conversation on Sunday morning that we had.
He telling his coach to pick a fight. Get your you-know-what off this elevator. That was bizarre, though, man. I had not. That was a first for me. Had not seen that.
Tongue in cheeks. I'm sure a little bit. That's to me the best, Mike Gundy.
Yeah, he's still pretty good, man. He's got a good quarterback. He's got a young, athletic quarterback.
It is time, I think, to broach the subject of these odd stories that we had tweeted to each other yesterday.
Yes.
Very strange.
We didn't tweet it to each other. We messaged each other.
We DM'd.
I believe it's just a text, but go ahead.
You are correct. A text.
A text is a direct message of sorts.
But that's not a DM. It's a text.
It is a direct conversation.
A
DM between the three of us.
It's from
a triangle.
It's a social media. I mean, that's like saying that a text, email, DM, it's all the same. It's all a direct message. I mean, you got to be able to differentiate.
I think Chris Broussard and KD had this misunderstanding earlier this summer.
That's right. We're not the first people to have the same disagreement. That's correct.
You tell yours. Okay. You show yours and I'll show mine, Mark.
I will. All right. This is ridiculous. So I give credit to the Channel 4 website, K4.com. They throw up a graphic, and it says assault and battery with a pastry. I thought, how can you assault someone with a pastry? If someone tries to hit me with a pastry, I mean, that's probably usually something you should say thank you for, right? I mean, here's a donut. I don't think that it is possible to be beaten with a donut. And it wouldn't be assault and battery with a pastry if it was assault and battery with a fist or assault and battery with something else. So, the alleged guilty party here, the person that has been charged, is 31-year-old Trevor Pearson. Tried to look for Trevor on social media today to see if we could have him on the show. Didn't find anyone that fit the description. He was a passenger in a car that was heading into a construction zone along I-35 in Garvin County. Everybody that travels I-35 knows where that construction zone is. It's a pain in the you-know-what. So as a driver began to slow down due to a narrowing lane, another driver sped past her, and someone inside flipped her off. Now, it's not clear as to who was flipped off, the speeding car. I think that is correct. The speeding car flipped off the slower car.
Okay. Which
Pearson threw a cupcake at the driver, hitting him in the face.
Good accuracy.
The driver was not injured, and he wanted to press charges. That's what I can't get my head wrapped around in this story, is how did he hit somebody with a cupcake in a car if he was, like, out the driver, right? Okay, so the driver can't be the one that is talking smack. Now, if it would have been an outside lane, inside lane situation, then how would the speeding car been passing on the inside lane of, you know what I mean? If you're trying to get into one lane. So that would be the only way that if you're facing each other, then you might be able to assault somebody with a cupcake. But otherwise, it would have to be almost a trick shot, Dusty, to get that cupcake in the face of the driver.
That's a talent right there.
The reporting leaves a little bit left to be desired here based on the story posted yesterday at 3:44 p.m. Exactly. I want it, like, there are a bunch of people in that newsroom at Channel 4. I want somebody to diagram how this happened. You know what I mean? I want a picture like they would do in court. So,
I mean,
anyway,
we'll
see.
I think the driver should let it go, right? I mean, I understand he's upset. He took a cupcake to the face. If it was buttercream icing, maybe he could have gotten himself a little snack. I understand you're a little upset, but the fact that nobody was injured, he should probably just let it go, right?
I mean pressing
charges
one of those...
seems a little bit much.
If they'd gotten one of those fried pies, I mean, that has a little bit more substance to it. It might be able to put an eye out. But a cupcake has got nothing to it. It hits you in the face at a high speed. It's going to break apart. No, I would say in the best interest of everybody, maybe that the assaulted party is forced to make a dozen cupcakes and present them with a nice thank you note. And do it the right way. Go back and undo the harm. Now, this situation at Popeyes in Houston is a little bit different. A little bit different deal.
I saw this yesterday, and I immediately thought of Matt Ravis. Because, and by the way, I'm just going to say, I still have yet to have one of these sandwiches. And at this point, I'm kind of scared to even go to a Popeyes, okay? I mean, there's violent people out there if they can't get their chicken sandwich. It's turning people crazy, okay? This is Houston, Texas. Here's the headline. Popeye's employees held at gunpoint over sold-out chicken sandwiches. Are you kidding me? Houston police confirmed that a man pulled a gun on employees at a Popeye's restaurant because they'd run out of chicken sandwiches. I mean, this has gotten too far, okay? It's gotten out of hand, Matt Ravis. I blame the likes of you for hyping this damn sandwich up too much. It's just a chicken sandwich. Get over it, people.
If you listened to the show, we would have known a week ago they were out.
Gosh.
You don't need to bring a gun with you. By the way, not me at all. I don't want anybody to get confused.
Never bring a gun to a sandwich fight. I mean, it's kind of funny because no one was injured, but this is just borderline psychotic here, man.
No, it's past the line.
I mean, it's causing people to go crazy. I mean,
the worst thing about this for Popeyes is that they have – I've been to Popeyes before, and I've ordered some other stuff on the menu, and it's pretty good. But how do you think that the rest of the menu is?
They don't even exist. They should get rid of everything. Just
they got some nice spicy shrimp
sandwich.
There.
That's all you need.
Spicy shrimp is not bad. If you went for a sandwich and you said, well, you got to have the spicy shrimp, there's no reason to try to shoot someone over that. None at all.
No. God. Good Lord. Just go to Chick-fil-A. May not be as good, but still good. My goodness. That was wild. I knew Matt Ravis would be very happy about that. And you brought something to the table today, too, via audio. Matt Ravis, what do you have in store for us here?
Well, we've heard about this hurricane, right? That's, like, devastating the ocean.
Well, it's the Bahamas. The Bahamas are just – and now it's just, like, sitting in one spot. It's not moving. It's
yeah,
just
like
sitting
1 mile per hour.
Yeah, sitting on top of the Bahamas, yes. Hurricane Dorian.
Well, you know, it's threatening Florida as well. And you know there's a lot of people in Florida who move down there just for the summertime.
Sure.
So this man had a very, very novel and bright idea of maybe how we could stop this hurricane.
Can't see how they haven't come up with some kind of way to combat these storms yet. They keep saying, you know, 2 days ago, 3 days ago, oh, it's at this, but it's going to hit all this warm weather. All this warm weather and warm water. We have a Navy. Why don't the Navy come and drop ice in the warm water so it can't get going as fast as it's going? There's got to be ways to combat this instead of just pointing at the thing and saying, well, now it's getting worse. Yeah, we know it's getting worse, but you tell us, oh, it's the warm weather. Oh, it's the wind. Well, we have an Air Force. Drive some Air Force planes around to get the winds going the opposite way. The Navy to go in circles to fight it the other way.
Oh, my gosh. The human race never lets me down.
That man does not need to pass go. He needs to go directly to NASA and be on the team that decides how we stop asteroids from hitting us.
I think Matt Ravis wins today. That was outstanding. I had not heard that yet, but, man, it exceeded any and all expectations I had when I read it on the rundown of audio. Where'd you find that, by the way?
Oh, it's on Twitter. It's all over Twitter.
Oh, that is glorious. I mean, now, here's the question I have for you, Mark Rogers.
I bet you there's a lot of people that couldn't figure out how to get enough ice to their tailgate this weekend, much less cool an entire ocean.
I'm going to go on a limb and say that he moved from up north down to Florida. What do you guys think? He had a pretty thick northeastern accent, didn't he?
Yeah, Yankee accent for sure.
Oh, just throw the ice in there and cool off the – maybe that's all we need to do for global warming too, right? I mean, everyone says that the oceans are warming up and that's creating a lot of this bad weather. We just need to dump a bunch of ice. Just get the Navy. Get a whole bunch of ice. Navy's all across the world. We just need to start throwing as much ice in the ocean as possible. It'll get rid of all this significant weather.
How can that guy figure out how to film himself and post that online if he has those thoughts and beliefs?
Now, here's the question. We once had an Oklahoman. I've already forgotten his name. He did have his 48 hours of pork rind love. But is this something like that, Mark? Did he just come up with something off the wall and post it so that he could go viral?
But it was a reporter asking him about it.
But I'm saying
this was a man on the street interview. It was the same thing. It was the same situation.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So is this similar, Mark? Are you saying that this guy really doesn't have these thoughts?
I have not seen the video.
Okay.
I need to see the video.
He sounded pretty authentic to me.
I will say, too, he's wearing just a delightful tropical shirt. I'm about to send you guys this video.
Okay, I need to see the video. All right, when we come back in the 1 o'clock hour, we're going to talk to Royce Young. We're going to both take a look at the video and see if we've been duped by a comedian or if this man is sincerely providing great help to all of the people fighting the hurricanes.
We have a host that's fought a hurricane, right? Or swam against it? What was the deal with the ultimate in the hurricane?
Yeah, this would be a good day to see if the ultimate could swim through a tsunami.
That's what it was. Okay.
That was a great proclamation. One of the great individual triumphs of all time, of individual might. Swimming
this guy's authentic. I can tell you just by looking at the picture, but I'll listen to it and watch it and give you 100%. But based off this, what he looks like, I think he's an authentic. He's no faker.
All right, we'll let you know on the other side of the break. Stay tuned to the Monsters of the Midday.
Nice stash.
Complete coverage of Oklahoma versus South Dakota and Bud Light.
Hope you're having a great day out there, Oklahoma City. All of us in studio today, Mark, Matt, and myself. I went Mark and Matt together and called you Mac. Maybe that's y'all's name for me. Return of the Mac. Mac was back over the weekend. Mac Brown with a nice win. We do have Matt Ravis, Mark Rogers, and myself in studio on this Tuesday. We could take your phone calls this segment if you'd like. You got any thoughts on what you saw from your team, Oklahoma State? We even had an Oregon fan last hour, 460-9957. Now is the time if you'd like to jump in, talk some football. Fantasy football very much in play. Mark says he's got a draft coming up tonight. I had one last night. NFL fires up Thursday, and we've got a full slate of college football. What a great time of year, great time for sports radio. So 460-9957 if you'd like to jump in with the Monsters of football. the midday. NFL Live on right now, boys, and I'm looking at a man, Jack Del Rio. And Coach Del Rio, formerly, he's been all over, but I think most recent he was at the Jacksonville Jaguars. And I got a call last week from my ESPN radio boss, Steve Haddad. And Steve said that Coach Del Rio just got signed with ESPN, and part of his agreement is that he is going to do some ESPN radio games, but he's never called a game before. And so he said, you know, I was, I've been doing games now 2 years on ESPN radio, some NFL games when I get a chance. I've got a game this week in Jacksonville, Kansas City. And he said, you know, Coach Del Rio was asking, you know, who are some guys that I can, you know, maybe learn from, I can talk to. And he said, you were the first guy I thought of. You know, you stepped in, you've done such a nice job. I was like, oh, that's very nice. He's like, is it okay if I give Jack your information? I'm like, Coach Jack Del Rio? Heck yeah, man. Are you kidding? So I got an email yesterday from Steve and with Jack Del Rio on there. And Coach Del Rio is going to be in the booth with me on Sunday shadowing me as the analyst on the Kansas City Jacksonville game. How cool is that, Mark?
That is awfully cool. He was one heck of a defender.
Yeah. Played for the Cowboys a little bit.
Yeah, all over the league. He was great. He was a great linebacker.
I thought that was cool.
That'll be fun.
Yeah, man.
You have to get some good stories from him.
Yeah, I've got buddies that have played for him and just praise him, speak so highly of him. I've heard nothing but great things about him, but I thought that was cool. I'm like, what, he's going to learn from me? This dude? This dude knows more about football than I can even try to imagine. So I thought that was really cool, and I look forward to calling the game. Chiefs at Jaguars is going to be fun, but Jack Del Rio in the booth, that's going to make it that much better. So, and you could probably check him out all
Jacksonville
across
beat
ESPN networks. Yeah.
About week four last year, Jacksonville beat the Patriots in Jacksonville. And clearly, you know, this is a good defense. Is this an upset possibility on the road? I mean, that would be a great win for the Chiefs if they go into Jacksonville and win this game early in the season.
Chiefs 4-point favorite. Just started digging into it. It's crazy when you do these NFL games. You just get – it's like information overload. It's SIDs in college, just kind of it's called something different in the NFL, but they handle all the media relations. I mean, I just get inundated with game notes, with interviews, every single bit of post-practice audio, and have it. It's just crazy. So it's kind of hard to sift through. But I mean, yeah, I think that. I mean, I'd say I like Kansas City in the game, but I think the big question is, what's Nick Foles going to look like, Mark? You know, how's he gonna settle in and quarterback that Jaguars offense? I think that's a big question mark. But I think clearly defensively, they're going to at least be able to challenge Kansas City. It's going to be some great matchups outside with the secondary and pass rush that Jacksonville has against that offense.
What kind of defense does Kansas City have? How much better?
I think they're going to be better. I mean, I like the Honey Badger a lot going over there. They lose Dee Ford, but they're also able to pick up Frank Clark. So I think Kansas City's better defensively. He's going to be a great game. I'm fired up. I'd say one of the more intriguing matchups of week one of the NFL. It's probably why ESPN's sending their radio broadcast there to do the game. All right, we do have Coach T on the line, 460-9957. If you'd like to jump in, Coach T, thanks for the call. You're off the Monsters. Go ahead, man.
What do you say, fellas?
Not much. How are you,
Coach T?
Oh, just great. I actually felt really good about my Cowboys after this last game, albeit we, you know, caveat they're playing Oregon State. But I think I may have mentioned to you guys my biggest plus for this season, and I'll have you guys comment on this and I'll get out of here, was the addition of Charlie Dickey. And I can see it already. I see different schemes that I've never seen before. I've seen near side guard tackle, pulling, doing some things that I really haven't seen Oklahoma State do. And I think that Charlie Dickey's going to continue to bring some of those schemes in. And have you guys comment on that? Have a good one, fellas.
Thanks, Coach T. Man, I've been praising this hire since they made it. And it's because I've been watching quite a bit of Kansas State tape last 4 years since I've had a Kansas State game, I think, every year since I've been in this spot with ESPN. And I can just tell you that he knows what he's doing. He is very good. And from fundamentals, technique, you can look at, he's had 2 second-round picks in the last 3 years, Cody Whitehair, Dalton Risner. And I'm totally with you, Coach T. And that was one of my big takeaways. Chuba Hubbard's great, right? I mean, Chuba Hubbard is got track speed. He's explosive. He can run through tackles. But I thought it's as good as I've seen an Oklahoma State offensive line play in years. So I'm 100% with you. I think it was a tremendous hire. Whenever Mike Gundy was able to go get him, Josh Henson moved on to a great spot at Texas A&M, and he had recruited well, so the cupboard wasn't bare. But I do think the addition of Charlie Dickey in week one, and I think you're already starting to see that tangible benefit, Mark.
Gundy said the same thing in his press conference yesterday. Cody Whitehair just got like a $27 million guaranteed contract for the Bears, got an extension. And so he's done a nice job since he's been drafted. But those are a couple of guys, Risner and Whitehair, that are examples of how good he's coached.
Yeah. Hey, my apologies. I just got a message from a buddy. And I forgot Del Rio was with the Raiders. I guess it's because I'm calling a Jags game and he's going to be there. Yeah, he was with the Raiders most recently. Did not go quite as well for Coach Del Rio there. But I've forgotten about that. Time flies. All right, Mark.
Who has it gone well for the Raiders with lately?
Nobody. Raiders have been a struggle. They've been on a struggle bus. Well, he did have one good year there, didn't he? Now that I think about it, what was that, a couple years ago? Weren't they decent?
If you go back to the early 2000s, I don't think the Raiders have had – I don't think they've been to the playoffs more than 2 or 3 times.
They played in the Super Bowl.
Let's go back and look at Oakland Raiders. Yeah,
that was
early
2000. That was, what, 2002?
Correct.
02, that was against – was that Tampa?
Tampa.
Right after – that was Gruden's championship. Who was the I'm drawing a blank. I'm trying to go into my memory bank without looking it up. Quarterback, I think he won the MVP there.
Rich Gannon.
Rich Gannon, yeah. That's right. 02 season.
Okay. So here the Raiders made the playoffs in 2016. Remember, that was
right.
The game that had no quarterback, Jack Del Rio.
Yep.
They were 12-4.
And that one good year, yep.
Neither team had a quarterback. The last time they made the playoffs was 2002.
Hmm.
And Bill Callahan was the coach that took them to the Super Bowl, who I'm not a fan of. You know what I'm saying? I know that people think that, and I think he is, an excellent NFL caliber offensive line coach, but to me, never was a real good head coach anywhere else. But here's the Raiders coaches since that 2003 season, which Bill Callahan was fired. North Turner, Art Shell, Lane mm-hmm. Kiffin, Tom Cable, Hugh Jackson, Dennis Allen, Tony Sperano, Jack Del Rio, John Gruden.
Golly. Wow. That's an interesting list of coaches.
The Raiders had one winning season from 2003 to 2018. One.
That's where Derek Carr really cashed in, right?
That's tough to do in the NFL.
He had that big year. 16, it's probably right around the time he got a
payday. And then he got hurt, right? He didn't play.
Yeah, he didn't play. He was out. Wow, I'd forgotten that's the Jack Del Rio era. Maybe it's just because the Raiders have just been, to your point, just been so irrelevant. Really? I mean, 1 year since 2002? It's a long way from the greatness of the Raiders.
Well, and I think it's also a reason. I mean, it's somewhat smart. That franchise shouldn't be so incompetent. But none of those coaches coached longer than 3 seasons. So you give Gruden a 10-year deal to let him know, hey, you're going to have some stability here. And matter of fact, Del Rio's the only one that coached more than 2.
Golly. Tom Cable.
I mean, they're just churning coaches.
Lane Kiffin, Tom Cable. I'll never forget. Do you remember it was when Al Davis was still alive and I'll never forget when he fired Lane Kiffin. He held that press conference, and do you remember, like, this is probably even before Matt Ravis, but the old-school projectors that you put, like, the plastic sheet on and you could write on, remember just the old-school?
That's an overhead, yeah, the overhead. The
overhead projector, yeah.
Correct,
He broke that out whenever, and he put, like, his speech on there. Do you remember that? when he held that press conference and he put it on there, that was the most bizarre thing ever. And you could tell, you know, Mr. Davis was not in great health at the time. That whole Lane Kiffin deal was just, that was ludicrous. And then Tom Cable,
after Al Davis had won all those Super Bowls, now you got to cut him a break. The man could run an overhead. He's won several Super Bowls, ran a very successful organization for a long number of years. He's not going to learn how to use PowerPoint.
That was
he's 70.
That was the first time I'd seen an overhead projector since like elementary school. I didn't even know that those still existed. Maybe your high school days.
Yep.
I don't think they had those.
That's right.
I was in high school.
My high school, your elementary.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and again, to go back over how successful the Raiders were at that point in time, I mean, they were incredible before they moved into the merger into the NFL. But they went to playoffs every year. Every year. Look, I mean, here you go. When they joined the NFL in 1970, Dusty, 8-4, 8-4, 10-3, 9-4-1, 12-2, 11-3, 13-1, 11-3, 9-7, 9-7, 11-5.
Greatness of the Raiders.
81, 7-9, 82, strike year, 8-1, 12-4, 11-5, 12-4. And then since then, it started to die down. But that was a great run.
Yeah, they had a great run. They had a fantastic run. It's been anything but that ever since. See, speaking of greatness, great coaches, and having a great run, I'd say Nick Saban kind of falls in that category. And Nick Saban was talking yesterday at his press conference, and he had some thoughts on the Oklahoma quarterback, Jalen Hurts.
You know, Jalen set a great example when he was here, when he was a player. He was a good leader. He was a good performer. And I also think when things didn't go his way, you know, he showed a lot of character as a person to continue to try to improve himself and do everything he could to help his team. And, you know, in this day and age, you don't often see that. But I think it was a really, really great example on his part. And because he did it that way, when he got an opportunity, he was able to do extremely well. Actually won, you know, the SEC championship game for Worcester. So now, because he's got that kind of character and attitude, I didn't see the game last night. We work on Sunday nights, but I hear he played extremely well. Did an outstanding job, and you know, that doesn't surprise me in the least bit. And we're really happy for him, not only in the way that he handled himself throughout this entire process, but now that he's having success as well.
Nick Saban talking about his former quarterback, character, leadership, all that was on display. Nice comments there from Nick Saban talking about Jalen Hurts, and he's right. I mean, I think Jalen Hurts, the way he dealt with that situation last year with Tua, getting pulled in the national championship game in the second half, staying there last year, and then when called upon, stepping up, rising to the occasion the way that he did, I just think that, I know for me personally, that went such a long way. And I had the utmost respect for the way he handled what for a lot of people would be, for a lot of, especially young people, that's a tough, difficult situation. You never know how your emotions are going to affect you and how you're going to handle that. And given the fact that it is at Alabama, you're under such a microscope. And, I mean, I don't know if grace is the right word, but he handled it as well as you possibly can. So I thought that was all really good by Nick Saban. I only say, though, I think that Jalen wants nothing more than to come after his coach, though, right, Mark? I mean, that's ultimately, I think, his that's his end game. At least mentally, that's what he would love nothing more than.
That would be great. That would be an unbelievable story for college football if that happened.
I'd say the ratings would be, they'd be okay, huh? Might be a couple people tune in for that.
Yeah, that story would be just, that would be off the charts if it happens. But if Jalen Hurts keeps playing like that, Oklahoma's going to have a really good chance to get there.
Long way to go. A lot of football left to be played. But clearly, Jalen Hurts, I think it's an understatement to say, off to a good start as the new quarterback for Lincoln Riley and the Oklahoma Sooners. Let's talk some NBA basketball as we welcome our man, Mr. Royce Young from ESPN, to the show. When we get back, see what Royce's thoughts are. what he thought about Oklahoma. Also, some thoughts on the NBA. Roy Shung joins the Monsters next.
The Morning Animals.
I do have some breaking bad news.
Joining the show today, his weekly spot in the off season. What's up, Royce?
Hey, Dusty, how are you guys doing today?
We are good. Well, are you ready to declare the Heisman Trophy race over? You want to go ahead and give it to Jalen Hurts?
Well, I mean, you know, I don't want to overreact or anything. It's just one game, Dusty. You got to kind of pump the brakes, and we all got to – there's a lot of games to be played, but I think it's pretty clear that Jalen Hurts is going to be the number one overall pick, and he's going to win the Heisman Trophy, and OU's going to win the national title. I think that's pretty clear.
Definite.
National title may be the only thing that that can mount much of a defense against right now.
Yeah, what's the most likely of those three scenarios? Probably Heisman. The Heisman. Right?
Heisman.
The Heisman.
Yeah, yeah, probably so.
I mean, Hurts has got he's truly got a really good chance. I mean, I think a lot of people talk about, like, the voter fatigue and, like, really could you vote for an OU quarterback third straight year? But if there's a guy that's going to be able to do it, it's Jalen Hurts, because he's got the equity built up because he's so likable. Everybody around, like, the entire country adores the guy. So if somebody's going to break down that barrier of the Heisman voter fatigue, I feel like it'd be him.
He's actually now a 3-1 favorite, man.
That's crazy.
The Vegas number moved after Sunday night's game, and he is now has the same odds as both Tua and Trevor Lawrence, 3-1 favorite for the Heisman.
That's nuts. That's crazy.
Long way to go, though, man. It's one game, but it is definitely a good start, and has a lot of people, not just in Oklahoma, but I mean the national media. They can't get enough of this story. So, I mean, This isn't just Sooner fans hyping this thing up. I mean, everybody, I think, genuinely is kind of mesmerized by this story and the performance he put up the other night. All that did was put gasoline on the fire.
Yeah, for sure. No doubt about it. It was definitely it was better than I thought it'd be, that's for sure.
Royce, what's happening in the NBA right now? Any moves? It was kind of a lackluster performance for Team USA today.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing kind of going on right now is, you know, there's not a lot NBA-wise to care about unless you, you know, like we talked about last week, unless you want to – there was a little bit more Joe Johnson workout news. That's kind of where we're at. We're at the Joe Johnson workout phase of the NBA summer. But I don't know if anybody didn't see Team USA today play Turkey. I mean, Team USA should have lost. Turkey should have won the game, and if Turkey made free throws, they would have won the game. USA kind of got bailed out on two different foul calls. I think they were both the correct call. Most likely the one that forced overtime, Tatum kind of hung his leg out there a little bit. That in the NBA, you might see an overzealous ref call an offensive foul in that situation, but Tatum got the call in this situation, hit 2 of 3 from the free throw line, forced overtime. But, you know, I think that the game today really illustrates just exactly what a lot of people could see. And while, yes, the Team USA they're sending – you know, really what I would kind of call their C team. It's not even the A or B stars. There's a lot of C stars on this team. They are the only team that has all NBA talent, but at the same time, the rest of the world is deep, and they've got good players on a lot of these other teams. And, you know, as you look at this and you look at Serbia and the USA in a matchup with Serbia in the knockout rounds, I don't think the U.S. is a favorite. I think Serbia is the favorite pretty clearly at this point.
When it gets time for the Olympics, are these American players going to change their tune? Think they're going to take that a little more serious? Or have we seen kind of the end of NBA players representing their country on any level?
I think that the Olympics, it'll bring it back, Dusty. You know, this feels a little bit more severe with the way that some of the players have backed out this summer. But this is kind of the way that the World Cup competition typically goes. You know, a lot of times I think you see a few more younger stars stay in. I mean, guys that have backed out, you know, the Devin Bookers of the world. Typically, those type of guys stay in, and they don't back out. So that's been a little bit unusual. But you don't normally see the A-list NBA stars play in this competition. But I don't suspect it's going to necessarily change for the Olympics. And quite honestly, you know, starting with I guess it was probably the 2008 Olympics. You know, that's a fertile recruiting ground right there to build your super team. As we all know, that's where you go. That's where the Miami Heat Big Three was sort of built, according to the legend of the story. So, you know, if you're an NBA superstar, you need to get over there and you know, start your recruiting process for the, for, you know, the 2024 free agency or whatever.
What other teams in the world, like for example, there's no Enes Kanter on Turkey. We all know his issues. But what other stars? Giannis' team got beat today.
Yeah, and Giannis only had like 13 points. I didn't watch. I mean, you know, forgive me, everyone, but I didn't get up at 6 a.m. to watch Greece versus who did they even play. I don't know who they played.
Bruno Caboclo had a big game.
That's right, Brazil. They played Brazil. Yeah, but I don't. Why did I don't know why Giannis only had 13 points or 14 points. That seems odd. But, I mean, Greece is not really a threat. I mean, Greece's second-best player is Nick Kalaitis. I honestly think that's their second-best player at this point. And not to take anything away from Nick Kalaitis, I think Rick Pitino called him the best passer he's ever seen. So, which seems like a little bit of an extreme statement. But, I think that, I think Spain is solid. They're always solid. Brazil's a solid team. But to me, it's pretty clearly Serbia is going to be the team that the U.S. probably sees if they get to the gold medal game. I don't even know that the U.S. will be there.
You'd mentioned the 08 Olympics, and did you see the video of Pat Riley and D. Wade on that boat dancing?
I did. I don't know what to think of that.
Pat Riley with the white hair and white beard, that threw me off, man.
Was that like dyed? I don't know. It's crazy. I was definitely thrown off by that, and maybe slightly disturbed by it even too, Dusty.
He had some good moves, man. I was kind of impressed with Pat. He was getting it.
Hey, Pat Riley, he is the king of NBA cool. I mean, that, you know, if you're talking NBA cool guys, Pat Riley is forever up there. He's had the slick back hair for years. He's got the pedigree. He's got the rings. He was
in a New Edition video.
Well, he's got the ass.
Yes.
You know, don't forget that. That's first or second paragraph on the Wikipedia page right there, I would think.
He's been in all the major markets too, right? I mean, L.A.,
yeah,
New York,
LA,
Miami.
Yeah.
He messed
Former
around.
Player. Yeah, he's got the profile, that's for sure.
I have one piece of NBA news that kind of at least, I don't know if it piqued my interest, but I noticed it. So I think this time of year it's at least noteworthy. I did see over the weekend where, or maybe it was at the end of last week, where Houston signed a 3-year deal extension with Eric Gordon.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was interesting just because it keeps that nucleus of Harden, Westbrook, Clint Capella together for, what, at least 3 more years now?
Yeah, I mean, and I wouldn't say it surprised me that Gordon re-signed. In his situation, you know, taking the long-term guaranteed money is probably wise to do. You know, Gordon has been a guy that's battled some injuries. He's somewhat inconsistent. In a lot of ways, though, Dusty, he's sort of their barometer. You know, when Eric Gordon has played well, supporting previously Chris Paul and James Harden, the Rockets, that's when they get really good. When they get that, you know, 4 or 5 threes a game from him and 18 to 20 points. When they almost upset the Warriors, a lot of it was because Eric Gordon was, at points in that series, their second-best player. And because he can be really dynamic and you know, an instant offense kind of guy. It's a little bit surprising, though, with the way that the Rockets have talked and with Tillman Fertitta, their owner, and trying to manage some costs going forward, that they would commit long-term money. But that's one of those deals that probably makes sense for both sides. But, you know, a lot of times you see guys take these sort of guaranteed money deals. You know, we just saw with Caris LeVert, who, in my mind, took a big haircut on an extension. But, you know, he came off a severe injury last year, a huge scare for him. And, you know, a lot of people have believed that he could be a near max player in the future because he has improved that much. But he went ahead and took the extension early and locked up some guaranteed money.
I'm very happy for Eric Gordon in one sense, and I'm very sad for him in another. So I've got an analogy for you guys. See if this makes sense. Eric Gordon, Russell Westbrook, and James Harden are all sitting at a bar. They break out a napkin, and they're drawing some stuff on it, and this has Eric Gordon, like, in the corner shooting threes and, you know, up in his points per game average, and then all of a sudden a waitress comes over and spills a beer on that napkin, and everything that was on there is wiped out. Because I think that's how it's going to be planned, and I think what is going to work out is just a wet napkin. It's going to be ball dominance by Russell Westbrook and James Harden, and it's going to be tough for him to make much of an impact.
You know, I hadn't actually thought of that, Mark, but now that you say it, it really makes a lot of sense that Eric Gordon took that money, right? Because his points per game, his shots per game. A lot of those things may be nosediving a little bit. So the attractiveness of Eric Gordon on the open market, if you're just kind of a, if you're just flying 30,000 feet above and you're not really paying attention to what's going on with Houston, and you know you're an executive and you're trying to find some supplementary scoring, and you're looking around the league and you're like, well, Eric Gordon's almost 30 years old, man. I mean, look, he's already declining. His shots are down, his points are down, and you just kind of forget the fact that, well, I mean, the guy barely he had somebody spilling his beer all over his napkin the whole time. So, I mean, that's a good point. I hadn't really thought of that. So if you're Gordon, I think taking the money now is pretty smart.
That, I mean, there's some, next year's NBA season is going to be so fascinating. I don't know, though, if there's anything that's going to be more intriguing to see how it works than that, what they do in Houston, how James
Harden.
How many
games do you think will, how many games do you think the media and everybody will give it, Dusty, until that we, you know, we say, uh-oh, do you think it's like four games? Like, if they start 1-3, are we all going to just freak out?
Yes, everybody's going to freak out.
I mean, start 0-1.
Do you remember
the Melo era in Houston ended pretty quickly?
That's true. What did that last, 9 games, 13 games, something like that?
Oh, it was over before it started, my friend.
I think it was 9 games. I think they came to Oklahoma City and they were 4-5, and Melo had that horrible game against the Thunder, and he never played again.
We didn't ask you about this. What did you make of that when Royce White, your Royce brother, made the comments about the NBA blackballing Melo, and then like the media ran with it. That was bizarre for like a couple days. Is that just NBA people just grasping for anything to talk about this time of year?
Yeah, I mean, shout out to Royce White because he's got a good first name, but he's not doing the Royce name a lot of good reputation here, because first of all, why do we care what Royce White has to say?
Agree.
I mean, seriously.
When was the last time Royce White played against an NBA player to even figure it out?
I mean,
he won't get on an airplane.
Like, are we going down there, you know, and just like putting a microphone in front of anybody's face? And do we, you know, why didn't somebody ask Nick Kalathis what he thinks right now, for crying out loud? And are we going to put that on Twitter and all talk about it? There's no reason to care what Royce White has to, what he has to think about this. I think also, Dusty, you know, I've seen people say this a lot. No one has any idea what the word blackball means. Like, Melo is not being blackballed. Like, it's not like this league-wide conspiracy to keep Carmelo out of the NBA. I don't understand why people keep kind of leaning into that and acting as if everyone has decided to freeze Carmelo Anthony out of the NBA for some sort of nefarious reason. It's just people don't want to sign him. And Melo's got a number of issues as to why he's kind of stuck there. And one of the biggest is that he can't disconnect himself from being Carmelo Anthony. You know, if you just threw Carmelo the player and you took away the fact that of who he is and what he's done in his career and the superstar ego and everything else, and you just took the player itself, I mean, he's basically Jared Dudley, right? I mean, he does a lot of the same type of things. He's Anthony Tolliver. He's a lot of these kind of aging stretch four players, and he could be a quality guy off your bench. Problem is that every team is afraid to bring him in because Anthony Tolliver is Anthony Tolliver, and he's Carmelo Anthony. And until he can figure out how to disconnect from that, and you know, going on, and while he tried to do a good interview on First Take with Stephen A. Smith, that doesn't help him because it just maintains that he doesn't quite get it yet, and that's why he's not in an NBA roster in my mind.
Yeah, he hadn't got it yet. I mean, so it makes that it was funny about asking, hey, you know, Pee, I'm coming off the bench in Oklahoma City. It still illustrates that he can't be a sympathetic figure right now if he believed the way that he did a couple of years ago when he really should have been coming off the bench.
Right.
I don't have any sympathy for him. I know he's not blackballed from the league. He's not in the league because there's a team that teams know that they're going to have a hard time getting him the minutes that he needs and the role that he wants, and he's not just going to sit over there on a bench to be a mascot no matter what he says to Stephen A. You're right.
Right. I mean, like, Vince Carter did this. You know, Vince Carter has aged gracefully in the NBA and has taken – now, I don't think Vince Carter was ever necessarily at the icon status of Carmelo Anthony, but Vince Carter has very easily just transitioned into a veteran role, and – he plays sometimes, he doesn't play sometimes. And Carmelo is just not comfortable with that, clearly. I think that Carmelo, when he comes to a team, he basically has, it's like an agreement up front. And when he agreed to come off the bench with the Rockets, he probably, there was like stipulations in place of like, well, but I want to be in closing lineups and I want this and I want this. It can't just be, hey, I'm coming to your team, I'll do what you guys need to do. And that's just not what Carmelo brings the team right now. That's why nobody wants him.
Royce, splendid hit today. We appreciate it. Thursdays are pretty packed, and it's not that busy of a time, so I don't think we'll talk to you again until next week.
That's all right. It's college football time. It's just football time, period.
I was about to say NFL, man. You got your Browns gear ready? You ready to roll?
I got my dog mask on right now. I've just been walking all week around with it, barking at everybody I see. I'm gonna go to Target later, and I'm just going to bark at the cashier.
I like it. Browns mania. Thanks, Royce.
All right. See y'all.
Royce Young, not see Royce White, by the way. Hey, Mark, and I shouldn't even – I don't want to do this because, I mean, you've just been filleting my guy for a while now, and I still like him, but is LeBron serious? You're trying to trademark Taco Tuesday? I mean, come on. Come on, LeBron. You can't have everything.
Just give it a shot. That's going to be a waste of time.
We should trademark next Friday.
I mean, what? Taco Tuesday.
I like that idea.
Come on, LeBron. You didn't come up with it, bud. I mean, Taco Tuesday's been around for a long time. LeBron James, and the latest thing he's trying to monetize off of. He has filed to trademark Taco Tuesday. I just hope LeBron is a little bit more focused on basketball this year. I hope he can stay healthy. I hope last year's injury wasn't any kind of trend, because that's the one thing about LeBron throughout the duration of his career. His health has never been in question. Last year, from the time he got injured, it completely changed the landscape of the Lakers season. And obviously, I'm stating the obvious, but the season, the future of the Lakers completely is dependent upon him being healthy and caring more about basketball than Taco Tuesday, Mark.
That'll be interesting. I think the Rockets are the most interesting team to me. The Lakers are number two.
All right, we've got an Ezekiel Elliott update. I want to take a look at some point spreads before we depart. That next on the Monsters.
Sports Animal Soundbite.
That's really the only thing you could really get upset with.
The latest on Zeke Watch. Zeke is in Dallas. It's the first time he's been in Dallas. And the last report that just came across the ticker, quote, they're very close to getting a deal done. And the report that came out this morning from both Adam Schefter, from Chris Mortensen, if a deal is done today, he will play this weekend. So, I don't know.
That's going to work out good for the Cowboys.
Sounds like this could all work itself out. Could all work itself out. So,
Jerry takes some heat, man. If Jerry can get this done this way, that speaks well, very well for him. Because it's not been an easy contract situation to handle. I wouldn't want to be negotiating with Zeke Elliott. Sorry.
No, he's not been an easy person to negotiate with. I'll tell you though, the Chargers took a different route with Melvin Gordon. They have informed Melvin Gordon and their people that they're done talking. And they're not going to talk about contracts at all until after the season. So it does not sound as if we will see much, if any, of Melvin Gordon this season, Mark. Now, he's going to have to show up at least for a game to get his accrued season so he can become a free agent next year. But he's going
to
leave a lot of money on the table this year. Huh?
He's already under contract, so he can just show up when he wants. I mean, do they have to let him do it?
Yeah, he can show up when he wants. They don't have to pay him if he doesn't show, but if not, they'd have to fire him, have to release him.
Right, okay. Well, his injury issues, I think this stems all the way back to last year. I don't know how it was handled, or I don't know who felt they were right or who felt that they were wrong, but when he got to London last year, he was having an incredible season because I had him about three fantasy leagues, and then something happened on that flight, and I don't know if the team thinks that he was – not as injured as he was, or if he was legitimately injured, or whatever happened, but the rest of the season went downhill from him.
I have no idea. I'm not sure. The guy's been, I mean, he's been a nice player. They did take him in the top 15. I think he was 13th overall for the Chargers. But I'm guessing he's wanting some serious cake, and the Chargers are 15 overall out of Wisconsin. He's only 26 years old. Going into his fifth season, and he's drawn a line in the sand. So this Le'Veon Bell, to a degree, you know, that's what was kind of interesting about last season, is not just watching Le'Veon Bell go through it, but what were the ramifications? What's the trickle-down effect that we're going to see in the NFL? And, you know, I think that's what forced Houston's hand to ultimately move on from Jadeveon Clowney. I don't know, Mark, what Melvin Gordon's trade status is, though. You know, you asked me, can they trade him? At least what I've read is that there's not going to be many people that are going to be willing to sign Melvin Gordon to the long-term deal that he wants.
Right.
So I think he's priced himself out of, you know, any trade scenario. Ultimately, I don't know how this ends for him.
It doesn't seem like there's a contender that has cap room.
Right. There's nobody that can be able to step up and pay him.
That could change, though, pretty quickly.
Well, I don't think it's going to change before the start of the season.
No. Probably could change based on injury.
I hope you did not hope no one drafted Melvin Gordon. I would say stay away from Melvin Gordon in any and all of your fantasy drafts. I think that's safe to say. Point spreads, Marcus. You asked me earlier about the Army-Michigan game, and you asked me if I thought Army goes to Michigan this week, and you had asked me if I thought that if they could give Michigan a scare the way that they did Oklahoma last year. I don't, because I think Michigan defensively is built and equipped to really limit and slow down Army. And I don't know exactly what Army has coming back, but they struggled to beat Rice in week one. It's a 7-7 game. I don't think they scored their final touchdown until with 4 minutes left in the game to win 14-7. Though Michigan was not impressive in their debut, I think that they were underwhelming in their season opener. But I think that this is a – I kind of like the points. 22 is a big number, and Army can obviously play a little keep away. But as I've watched Michigan's defense, I mean, this is kind of the way they're built and what they're set up to do. They got really good defensive line play, really strong linebacker play, and they run just a ton of man-to-man coverage and bring a safety down the box already. So the way Don Brown calls his defense, I just and they're with their personnel, I think it's a game that Army could potentially, you know, keep inside the number, but I don't think it's one that they can go into the big house and take this Michigan team to overtime the way they did in Norman.
Right. I understand that. I can see that. I do think, though, you can, you know, quarterback is going to be new at Army this season. You could try to hit Michigan over the top on some play action pass, but it kind of gets out of what they wanted to do. I mean, what they do the best. But yeah. I do think Army will play well. I think that they'll play well, but Michigan probably more than likely hold them to something under 14.
What do you think, Missouri hosting West Virginia? This was almost, this was in the hunt for a game that I was going to do. What, any thoughts on that number?
Mm-hmm. I do have thoughts on that number.
14, Missouri favored right now.
I'd lay the points.
Yeah, it seems like a nice bounce-back game for Missouri.
I think it is a nice bounce-back game for Missouri. I really do. But, you know, I don't know what happened at Wyoming. That's a tough place to play in terms of the altitude. I could see a correction on both sides of that one.
Tulsa, 6.5-point favorite against San Jose State, Marcus. Be a nice
on the
win.
Road.
Be a nice win on the road if they can get that.
I can guarantee you one thing at the end of the show today. I will make this, and you can take this to the bank. It will be much easier for Tulsa to score at San Jose State than it was in East Lansing.
I think that is probably the smartest thing you've said all day, Mark.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
How about last one for me? I don't think I've ever seen this. I can't even... Which makes it even more odd that I haven't been able to find an OU line. Have you seen the number that's on this Alabama game this week, Mark?
But that's a D1 game.
I understand that. I've never seen.
That's why they don't put a line on the OU game. Is just because it's not a D1 opponent. They're going to line it up on every D1 game.
New Mexico
yeah,
State going to Tuscaloosa, Alabama. And the current number is 55. Have you ever seen a line that big? I've never
That's
seen a number
big.
That big. That's like an over-under.
Yeah, well, and it probably is close to what the over-under is on the game anyway.
63.5 is the over-under currently. Sorry, 64. It went down to 63.5 to 64. Alabama, a 55.
I think I saw Todd Furman tweet this out. It's the largest spread. And since Alabama was favored over somebody else, and it was about like 49 or something like that, and Alabama did not cover.
Big number. Big number. All right, we're going to take a look at more of these spreads throughout the week. Our picks will come up on Thursday. Have a great rest of your Tuesday. 21-hour break for Mark, myself, Matt Ravis, Monster of the Midday, back with you tomorrow.
Calling all fantasy football commissioners. Win a fantasy